basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
Back at it on this week's edition of Bucks Weekly as we come to you one day removed from a frustrating, tough loss for the Bucks to the Indiana Pacers a night ago, and they will have one more crack at that Pacers team tomorrow night in the fifth and final game between those two teams this season. And look, we talked about this a little bit on Bucks Talk last night, but you know, number one, I think it is pretty safe to say, in the regular season at least, this Pacers team, they're just not a good matchup for the Bucks. The Bucks had so much success against not only the Pacers, all of those teams in the Central Division for the past few years, and Tyrese Halliburton's play is a big part of it. But as we've seen, the challenge that still exists for this Bucks team, despite all the growth that we mentioned on the defensive end of the floor, the challenge that's still out there for this Bucks team is the point of attack, how they defend that, because that's been really one of the bigger constants throughout the course of this season. A few of the other ones, transition defense, it's kind of tied to the point of attack defense, but transition defense, rebounding, those are other areas we've pointed to throughout the season. We've seen growth in both of those. And to be fair, we've seen growth in how the Bucks have defended opposing backcourts. But we've seen it start to pick up once again these past, this past week, these past few games. And that was certainly the case against the Indiana Pacers. What makes them a tough matchup is what makes them a tough matchup for a lot of teams in this league. And that is the play of Tyrese Halliburton. That was evident once again last night. As Tyrese Halliburton didn't have a game where his numbers jumped off the page, but he was still very much in control in most moments that he was on the floor. He had a stretch or a string of back-to-back games where he tallied 43 assists and just two turnovers. And in the game last night, 11 assists, two turnovers for Tyrese Halliburton, but he scored 26 points. He had 9 rebounds, and that was what jumped out as well, is the way that the Pacers guards rebounded. And the big thing that makes the Indiana Pacers such a difficult matchup for the Bucks is the first quarter and the third quarter, that's where the Bucks found a lot of their success. And a big reason for that, as we continue to mention, it's not about who starts the games, it's who finishes and who plays the most minutes. The starting lineup that the Pacers went with last night, it was very clearly done to throw more length out there because of Giannis, but their starters were not impactful. The Pacers bench scored 70 points in that game, and you know, we've talked many times about the plus minus number. It's not the be all end all, but it oftentimes can tell the story of the game, and it'll match the eye test. And it very much did a night ago, where the plus minus numbers for the Pacers starters, save for Tyrese Halliburton and Miles Turner. Well, Miles Turner still had a poor number there, but by and large, the plus minus numbers for the starters were not good. It was the bench numbers that jumped off the charts. 70 points scored by the Pacers bench. The Bucks' success in the first and third quarters was because of those matchups and the player personnel that was on the floor for the Pacers. 32 points in the opening quarter. It seemed like the Bucks were going to get to 40 easily. The offense kind of stalled a bit. And in the third quarter, it was there early. It started to fade away late. But those were the minutes where you saw Jalen Smith on the floor, who was a zero, less than zero offensively, had no impact defensively either, and it helped the Bucks' defense because it was a non-shooter on the floor. He ended up taking 10 shots. He took 5 of their first 8 shots in the game, did not make any of them. That was a major success for the Bucks to help slow down that Pacers offense. Jalen Smith ended up going 1 of 6 on threes, and you saw as the game progressed, the gap between Jalen Smith and the nearest Bucks defender widened, where they started to see, okay, we didn't really trust him coming in. We have absolutely no trust here. Rick Carlisle recognized that, made the switch. It allowed the Bucks to use Giannis as a helper and to play basically 5-on-4 defensively. When the Pacers went to their bench, you couldn't do that because their bench was smaller, and that's where the challenge exists. Again, that's the biggest thing this Bucks team is going to have to address as we move into the second half of the season, get close to the All-Star break, and of course, with that comes the trade deadline. How do you improve your perimeter defense? Obviously, the absence of Jay Crowder is a big one. He's not the guy that's going to fix everything. It's going to make you better defensively, but it's not going to fix everything. You're still going to need some help in the personnel front. And when you looked at the bench matchups, the Pacers, the disclaimer to add, too, is a handful of these players the Pacers are bringing off the bench started earlier in the season and could be starters on a lot of teams in this league. That's why their bench has been so good this season. But Benedict Mathurin, again, very impactful, 25 points. Buddy Hield did not score, took four threes, six shots, missed all of them, but he's another guard and a perimeter player that's going to stretch you out and spread the floor. Obi Toppin, an energy player, gets up and down the floor, plays at that pace the Pacers like to play at, has a lot of defensive flaws, but he can score. Isaiah Jackson was bringing that edge that we see a lot of times with Bobby Portis. And, of course, T.J. McConnell, who, for whatever reason, has a career game against the Bucks every single time he plays. Those guys were spreading the floor. It didn't allow the Bucks to hover around the rim, to protect the rim, because you're playing on the perimeter. That's where the defensive rebounding areas or issues became problematic. Long rebounds, second chance points, the way the Pacers feasted off of that. 24 second chance points on 14 offensive rebounds. I would venture to guess a lot of those came in those moments when the Pacers went exclusively to their bench. And the numbers back that up as well. If you just look at the offensive rebounds in the game by player for the Pacers, 4 of the 14 came from their starters, 10 came from the bench. So it's just a styles clash where the Pacers personnel, it does not fit the way the Bucks want to play defensively. And we've seen the Pacers take advantage of that 3 times in 4 matchups. It's a team I wouldn't really want to see in the postseason, not to say I don't think the Bucks can beat them, but for those reasons. Styles make fights, and this is one of those fights that you just go in with an uneasy feeling about with the way the Pacers play. You got one more game against them, but the thing is, you've already lost the season series. So now the hope is Pacers don't start to catch fire. You still got a little bit of a gap there. I believe it's 4 games in the loss column separating the teams. You still have that gap. But should the Pacers catch fire, should you stumble a bit, Indiana has the tiebreaker. And not only for the Central Division, if need be, but any playoff seeding as well. That was the biggest negative of the performance last night, and now one more tomorrow night. And this is the start of an interesting month for the Bucks, because not only are a lot of these games within the Central Division, we'll get to that in just a moment, but you have 3 different mini-series like that. You have the home and road with the Pacers. You have a road and road with the Pistons later in the month, and then you have a home and home with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So a lot of divisional matchups and a lot of those series that the Bucks will see in this month of January. We'll get to the rest of the numbers as we touched on where the Bucks ranked in the month of December and how they've grown since not only the start of the season, but November 3rd. We'll get to all of that throughout the course of the show. But when we return, it is time for Gail Klappa's conversation with Bucks assistant coach Josh Oppenheimer. That comes your way after this on Bucks Weekly.
The next era of Bucks basketball is here.
Lillard, 3-pointer for the lead. It's game time.
Giannis just inside the 3-point line, working on Orlando Robinson. Spins around him, and goodness gracious.
This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Tonight, we'll unpack it all with a guy who's been in the middle of it all, the president of the Bucks, Peter Fagan. And our special guest tonight, who's traveling with the team, is Bucks general manager, John Horst. By far the best record in the league. And Chris Middleton is a huge part of that thrill ride.
The source for the inside scoop on every dribble, drawn up play, and decision made. Now, here's your host, Gail Klappa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gail Klappa, and this is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. It was a December to remember. The Bucks racked up 11 wins, only 2 losses. For the month, it was the best record in the NBA. Then came the bubbly, some fireworks in the Deer District, and on New Year's night, the first big test of 2024. It may be an understatement to say that there's no love lost between the Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. You could sense the growing rivalry as the bench unit for the Pacers rang in the new year like all-stars. The Bucks went cold down the stretch. The result, the Pacers beat the Bucks for the third time this season. But it won't take long for a shot at redemption. The Bucks face the Pacers again in Indy on Wednesday. Tonight, we'll take an in-depth look at the offense of the Bucks. Our guest has a unique perspective. He knows shooting inside out. Around the league, they call him the Shot Doctor. And Bucks assistant Josh Oppenheimer sits down with us tonight here on Courtside. Josh, always great to visit with.
It's great to be here.
Well, Josh, you know, Mama said there'd be days like this. The Bucks had plenty of open looks in crunch time against the Pacers Monday. But the shots, as you know, just weren't falling.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of both sides of the ball, right? Indiana didn't shoot the ball great. We didn't shoot the ball great. Maybe a little bit too much time watching the ball drop the night before. But no, we didn't shoot the ball great. I thought we competed at a high level for the majority of the game. A couple bounces here, a couple bounces there. Unfortunately, more their way than ours. And they were able to pull out a tough win, but I thought it was a great opportunity for our guys that had a little bit of a playoff atmosphere, as you said in your opening. But we just got to keep getting better. As we know, it's a long season. Rivalries really aren't built in the regular season. We just got to keep getting better. As Giannis always says, practicing good habits, learning one another, and I'm really excited about our group moving forward.
Josh, just curious, as a shooting coach, what do you do to help really good shooters develop, you know, a short-term memory to move on after a night when the shots just don't drop?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to one of our players about that today. Everybody views toughness as, you know, strength and power. I think the great shooters are very, very tough mentally. They're able to move on from one shot to the next, whether make or miss. Something I always tell guys is, you know, sometimes you shoot a perfect shot and it just doesn't roll in. Sometimes you shoot not a great shot and it does roll in. You have to take the good with the bad. You have to believe in the process. You have to trust your work, and understand that, you know, people talk about baseball hitters, 3 out of 10, you're great. But that means you fail 70% of the time. Great shooters in basketball, especially from the three-point line, are 35 to 40%. Again, you're failing 6 to 6.5 times, and you have to be able to deal with it and move on. And I think that's the greatest skill that great shooters have, is they trust their work, they trust their shot, and they let the thing fly.
Oh, fascinating. Well, Chris Middleton, another great Bucks player, back to playing about 30 minutes a game now this season. The team, of course, was careful to ramp up his playing time slowly as Chris recovered from knee surgery. Josh, from your perspective, how does Chris look on the court? Are we beginning to see the all-star version of Chris Middleton?
I do, and it's really, really exciting, and I'm really happy for Chris. I know he's been frustrated over the past couple of years. Everybody talks about the knee, but he also had a procedure on his wrist. So over the last few years, it's been a few bumps in the road for Chris. He's an absolute professional. He's handled it the best he can. But he's human, so some frustration does set in. But I really believe that you're starting to see the Chris we all know slowly but surely start to show himself. The one thing is, you know, you can't beat Father Time. Chris is getting older. He's making some adjustments in his game. But he's a terrific offensive player. He's the smartest guy on the court most nights. He just really sees stuff in the game before it starts to happen. But he really, really is starting to look like the Chris of old, per se. He's posting up. He's playing off the dribble and pick and roll. He's hitting spot-up shots. And we're going to need all that. But the one thing that he really, really gives us is his brain is just at a high, high level from a basketball perspective. Our offense runs better. Everything runs a little bit smoother when Chris is out there.
We'll have more with the Buck Shot Doctor, Josh Oppenheimer, in a moment. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
This is Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Back to Gale and Bucks assistant coach, Josh Oppenheimer.
Josh, I'd like to chat a bit more about your work with Giannis. It looks like you're working with him to develop an effective mid-range shot from around the free throw line, and then down deep, some spin moves that we've seen literally leave defenders in the dust.
You know, I say this all the time. Giannis is a joy to coach. He makes me a better coach every single day. Because he's always searching to get better, to improve just a little bit more, to challenge himself, which challenges me. Me and him talk about it all the time. I think he's got so much more to grow as a player. There's so many more things that we can touch on. You talked about his mid-range shot. It has been a point of focus for us this year. As well as in the post. I think what a lot of people don't think about is we didn't have a summer to work. Giannis had the knee procedure, so he was on the shelf for, you know, close to 3 months. We got in about a month of work prior to his surgery. But for any player to not get their summer to work on not only new things but tightening up their strengths, we've sort of used the beginning of the season to do what maybe we do in a summer. So he, as I said, he's a joy to coach. He comes in every day. The first thing he says to me is, "What do we got today, coach?" He trusts me. I trust him. And he's trusting the new things that he's adding to his game. And as I spoke about earlier, it's, you know, you can work on it by yourself, trusting to go out there and do it in a game. For any player, no matter what your level is or your greatness may be, when you talk about a Giannis, is incorporating it into your game, seeing where it fits in. Look, he fights the almighty battle of he's virtually impossible to keep from getting to the rim. And that spoils all of us.
Mm.
If Giannis takes a 15-footer, you know, it's hard for people not to say, fans, coaches, critics, just go to the rim, because he makes it look so easy. He's taking on 3-4 defenders every time he has the ball. I think he plays against a crowd of defenders more than anybody does in the league. He rarely faces one-on-one coverage. I mean, a couple times Indiana tried it. He had 51 and 64. Mm. Last night he saw a crowd as the ball was in flight to him. They were sending multiple defenders to him. I'm really, really proud of him for his ability to try new things, try the pull-up. He shot a 3 last night in a crucial situation that went in and out. That's not easy to do, no matter how great you are, to take the chance, to stick your toe in the water, per se, and know that, hey, I have to have belief in myself. This is the right shot to shoot. If it goes in, great. If it doesn't, I know it was the right play. And it's going to extend his career, because he's just going to keep working. He's going to keep getting better. And I'm really, really pleased with his improvement in those areas that you talked about.
And Josh, as you know, Giannis has also changed his routine at the free throw line this year. He's hitting roughly 67% of his free throws so far this season, but it seems the last month or so his stats have improved. Josh, give us your perspective on Giannis' approach at the free throw line.
Again, couldn't be more proud of him. He is, as I talked about, not having an off season to work. I think he's getting better and better. I think he's getting more and more comfortable, more and more confident. He's hitting free throws in clutch time at a higher rate. He's making free throws down the stretch when we need them. He spends a lot of time working on his free throw. Again, every time he steps to the free throw line, He can feel all eyes on him. But as I said, with the rest of his game, really, really proud of him with how he's building his confidence, how he's trusting his routine, how he's trusting his shot. I may be biased, but I have all the faith in the world every time he steps to the free throw line, especially in clutch situations. And I just think he's doing a terrific, terrific job at improving, trusting the process per se, and just never being satisfied in who he is as a player, which is really, really exciting for not only myself, but I think our team, the city of Milwaukee, and the NBA in general. Because I do think after 11 years, he's still got a ways to go as a player, and it's really exciting to think about.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, Josh, one other point of curiosity. Why do you think some players, even some of the great ones, struggle with free throws? I remember even back in the day, a player as accomplished as Wilt Chamberlain could barely buy a free throw. Your thoughts?
Look, shooting is a very, very complex thing. The brain to the body, the touch, the comfortability, everything working in unison. For some people, it's very, very easy. For others, it's not. For some, they pick up a basketball and they have the touch, the hand-eye coordination, and they're just able to shoot. Other players, for some reason, all the switches per se don't click all the time at the perfect time. For a variety of reasons that we could spend hours and hours talking about. Some people would agree with, some they wouldn't. That's perfectly fine. But look, there's a lot of pressure. I would challenge a lot of people to have 10 seconds to finish an assignment in front of 20,000 people every single time you do it. And I'd love to see their percentage of never misspelling a word on a computer, never ever hitting the wrong key. Whether it's Giannis or anybody else, look, these are the best in the world at what they do. Doing what they do in a high-pressure situation every single day, every single night. And now with social media, even more pressure. It's real-time compliments, real-time criticism all the time. That's not easy to deal with. These are all very, very young people, per se, with a lot going on. And sometimes everything clicks and sometimes it doesn't. All you can do is put in the work, which nobody takes more serious than Giannis. But whether it's a Wilt Chamberlain, a Giannis, Mark Price, Steve Nash, who are all-time great free throw shooters, Dame Lillard, for some guys it just clicks. For others, it's a little bit more work. But the thing I like to tell people is shooting's one component. Free throw shooting's another component of the game. I'd like to ask some great shooters if they would trade their ability to shoot with some other player's athleticism, speed, ability to jump, their size. But that's our world, right? Is everybody looks for the negative. Very few people compliment the positive. But Giannis puts in the work. I know a lot of other players who put in the work. And, you know, sometimes you got to live with the good and the bad. A whole lot more good with Giannis than bad. Tell you what, I'll take it. And I'm sure most people would.
Oh, amen. More insight in a moment with Josh Oppenheimer. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Here's more with Gail and Bucks assistant coach Josh Oppenheimer.
Josh, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Damian Lillard, the big offseason addition for the Bucks and one of the greatest three-point shooters literally of all time. Dame averaging about 25 points a game so far this season, but Josh, it seems like he's still trying to find his stride here in Milwaukee.
You know, again, I talk about these guys being human beings all the time. I think 11 years Dame was in Portland. Think about just all of us when we're somewhere that long. Everything's easier, getting to work, getting to the store, knowing where you get your favorite cup of coffee. All of that stuff Dame is working through. And in the meantime, he's got to perform in front of 20,000 people, and people think he should just be the best of who he is. I've known Dame for a long time. I knew him when he was at Weber State. Who he is as a man, as a player, is amazing to have seen him grow over the years. I can only speak personally. I couldn't be happier for where Dame is right now. We're 30-plus games into the season. I love to see all the negative comments out there for us being the second-best team in the East, a game and a half out of first, and everybody loves the Celtics, as they should. Great, great team. Great players, great coach. Dame is going to keep getting better and better and better. We haven't seen the best Dame yet. The best Dame is coming soon. I don't say that to put pressure on Dame. He's just finding his footing. He's the new kid at school. And he's trying to adjust and find some normalcy, find a routine, and just a lot going on for him. But I think he's played at an all-star level, at a very, very high level. Again, we have new coach, new staff, new players, a new main piece in Dame, and everybody's finding their way. Everything's new. Especially for a guy like Dame. But nobody in the league wants to defend him individually. Nobody wants to defend him and Giannis as a duo. They make everybody better. People are seeing new things when it comes to Dame. I think he's showing people what a great playmaker, passer he is. He makes guys' games easier because, along with Giannis, he attracts so much attention. But I couldn't be happier personally with the way he's played. Look, these guys are competitors. I'm sure Dame could make every shot, and he's going to tell you, I got to play better, which is great. I mean, he's never satisfied. He's always in the gym. He's back at night shooting, working on his game. He's a great leader. He's wrapped his arms around our young guys. He gets them back in the gym with him at night. He's a terrific, terrific addition to our team. Obviously, he's got a ton of responsibility, which I think he's handled very, very well. He's just getting adjusted, as anybody is, to a new job, a new surrounding, moving. A lot comes with that. But again, he's expected to just go out and perform. But as I will always say, he's a human being like all of us. He's got regular human being things going on in his life day to day. Basketball isn't the only thing these guys do. They're, you know, parents, they're partners, they're, you know, people's children themselves. They have a lot of responsibility. So to get up and leave somewhere after 11 years, come to a new place, learn new things, I think Dame is just doing absolutely terrific. Huge acquisition for us. Couldn't be happier. I think he's been absolutely terrific, as I keep saying, because I really do truly mean that. But I do think the best of Dame we've yet to see, and it's super, super exciting. Because to have the record we have, and for everybody to be writing us off already, which is funny to me, Dame has a whole nother level to go to. I have no doubt he's going to go there. I think he's super excited about being here and about what's going to come in the future. I wouldn't want to play us. I wouldn't want to play against Damian Lillard going down the stretch. I darn sure wouldn't want to play against him and Giannis and Chris and Brooke and everybody else as a group that we have. But who better to have than Damian Lillard when the game's on the line?
Well, that's absolutely for sure, Josh. And finally, Josh, as you mentioned, we're now more than 30 games into the season. you're getting a good sense of what this team might be capable of. In 30 seconds, what's your message to Bucks fans as the season now kicks into high gear?
Get your tickets. We're going to be exciting to watch. We have some great players. We're a terrific team. Coach Griffin's done a terrific job up to this point. I just think the best is ahead. We haven't seen the best of what this team is going to be and has to offer. But they really, really like each other. They're really, really coming together as a group. And the exciting thing is that we have the talent, and we have the toughness as a group to, I think, go where this team has the ability to go, and that's to challenge for an NBA championship.
And we've got one of the best shooting coaches in the business. Josh, always great to visit with you. Thanks for your insights. And you've been listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. So long, everybody.
All right, the Bucks get to see the Indiana Pacers again tomorrow night and wrap up a five-game regular season series with that Pacers team. Let's get you caught up on some other scores around the league tonight, as there's two very notable events. One is going on right now, and one has gone final. Again, there's a lot of season left. There's, what, two-thirds of the regular season remaining? Something
just
like
about.
That? Yeah. Just trying to do the math. 45 games roughly for most teams. I think we're around like 30, 35 games played. Close to 50. Somewhere between 45 and 50 for a lot of games. I know this is Bucks Weekly, and I know Bucks fans feel a certain way about the player I'm about to name and team I'm about to name. But if I gave you a vote for the MVP, Matt, and said, we're going to change things and we're actually just going to vote on the first 35 games of the season, who would you vote for?
Joel Embiid, yeah. Philadelphia 76ers.
Joel Embiid tonight, 31 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists, a triple-double with 30 points. And stop me if you've heard this before with Embiid this season. He did it in three quarters. Did not play in the fourth quarter once again.
And they're playing, I know we didn't think this a month ago, but they're actually playing
a much better
Chicago Bulls team.
Much, much better. How many games is that this season that Joel Embiid has not played in the fourth quarter? It's got to be close to 10 at this point.
It's got to be.
And look, that's the big difference between the Bucks and the Sixers, because by record, they're very similar. The Bucks still have a better record than the 76ers. I think Philly is now going to be 23-10 on the season, and the Bucks are 24-9. So you're a game in front of the Sixers. Neither of these two teams has played a difficult schedule. I think they're right around neck and neck in the bottom five, I believe, for strength of schedule for opponents. The difference is, and this is not to say one way or the other is better, because I do think there's merits to both. Obviously, you want to get blowout wins. It's nice to have. You also like some of those clutch wins we talked about at length earlier in the season. It helps you when you get to the playoffs and you get to some of those situations. It's not to say you want to win every game by a blowout or you want to win every game in a close format. I think it's striking a balance between the two is probably what best serves you. The Bucks, early in the season, it was all clutch wins. And for the Sixers, throughout the season, it's been blowouts. They've been blowing out bad teams. That's the biggest difference between these two teams, and I think that's a big reason why the Bucks have kind of been an afterthought. Philadelphia's gotten a lot of attention. The Celtics have gotten a lot of attention earlier in the season. Orlando was getting attention. The Bucks have just kind of been, oh, yeah, I mean, we knew when they had Dame, we expected them to be great. I think we thought they'd be better than this, when quietly, as you just heard Josh Oppenheimer talk about it as well, they're right there. As of right now, they're 2.5 games back of the Celtics. But Philly, look, give them credit. They have blown out bad teams on their schedule.
Not only that, but Joel Embiid has sat the fourth quarter 10 times this year.
So, yeah, 10 times.
22 out of 32.
He's been incredible. He has been incredible so far this season, and that's, look, I said this a couple weeks ago, too. It's way too early to get into awards It's especially too early to talk about seeding or playoffs. You got to wait until you get into March before we get into any of that. But I do not mean any disrespect to the Boston Celtics. I still feel like the 76ers are the team I am more concerned with than I am the Celtics. Because Joel Embiid has been unstoppable this season. You can say, well, we have Brook Lopez.
No.
That's true. You have size of Brook Lopez. But, you know, it's like the Giannis argument a couple of years ago. No one has had an answer for Joel Embiid. You may be best positioned to at least counter him, but I don't even know what best positioned means when we've seen what Joel Embiid has been doing the last few years. You've got Giannis and Dame, and that's going to be a challenge for Philly to contend with. I'm not trying to concede that. But I don't think anybody is equipped to stop Joel Embiid. Same with the Nikola Jokic argument. So you have that component. Tyrese Maxey has made a leap 1.5 or 2 levels this season. He is, look, same with the Giannis and Dame thing. You can make a very strong case, and it's not just Joel Embiid. The pairing of Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid has been better in terms of efficiency and their output so far than Giannis and Damian Lillard. That is not to say that won't change. And as Josh Oppenheimer said, we got Dame. We know what to expect from him. He's only going to keep getting better. But that's what concerns me about Philly is they have that star now that they thought we're going to go have to hunt for another star. He was already on the roster in Tyrese Maxey, and they have a lot of flexibility with money in the offseason. They can bring in more of that to salary. They have an expiring deal in Tobias Harris. They got a lot of assets to ship out as well to bring in some more supplemental pieces. So to me, you can't just discount Philly. As concerned as you are of Boston, you have to have that same amount of concern for the 76ers. And, of course, the Miami Heat are always lurking as well. When we come back, I mentioned the Boston Celtics. They are in action right now in a very, very interesting game when you look at their opponent. And we talk about making leaps. That's been their opponent from the Western Conference tonight. We'll get you updated on that score and wrap things up after this on Bucks Weekly. All right, so the Philadelphia 76ers won earlier tonight, and they gain a game on the Bucks by way of the Bucks losing last night in their win. So you entered the week 2 games up on Philly and 2 games back of the Celtics. You could potentially now be 3 games back of the Celtics and just a game in front of Philadelphia. So Philly wins, beating the Bulls, in a game that was much, much closer than it originally appeared, as Philly led that game by as many as 31 points. The Bulls never led. And Joel Embiid, again, only played 3 quarters and had a triple-double with 31 points. The other big game on the schedule tonight, at least in the Eastern Conference, is in Oklahoma City, where when we talk about surprises this year, the Oklahoma City Thunder are just a game and a half back of the Minnesota Timberwolves for the best record in the West. Think about that. The Timberwolves and Thunder have consistently been at the top of the Western Conference standings this season. The Nuggets are up there, sure. They've dealt with some injuries to Jamal Murray. And now without Aaron Gordon, though, I believe he just returned after being attacked by, was that his dog that bit him?
I think it was his Rottweiler, but during the season he doesn't really take care of it.
I can understand why he would bite him then. He doesn't take care
Dog's
of
looking for revenge.
But the Celtics are in Oklahoma City playing the Thunder, and the Thunder are up 18 right now, 110-92 midway through the fourth. So it does appear Boston's going to lose, and they would drop to 26-7, still 2 games in front of the Bucks, but just 3 games in front of the 76ers. So you got those 3 teams still jumbled up there in the Eastern Conference standings. Tomorrow night, the Bucks wrap up their 5-game season series with the Indiana Pacers. 6 o'clock tip, 5:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to tune in after the game for Bucks Talk. We'll talk to you then.